Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, listeners. You've just tuned in to Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Rashida and Robert. It's July 21st, and you've just tuned in to our Sunday brunch show. As you know, every third Sunday, we have our special Sunday brunch show. Otherwise, we're usually on at 6 p.m. Every Sunday. But with that said, before we get the show rolling, because we have a really great forum subject today, I want to bring in my co-host and brother in martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm really excited because this is a subject that is not touched that often.
Not that often.
Protocol of martial arts.
Exactly.
Because it ranges so far. It's like I was a backyard student for a lot of my career.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the martial arts protocol doesn't quite carry over as much as they do in a traditional school. My buddy Billy, MMA instructor down in Orange County, California, says, you know you're a martial artist when you're in an MMA school, you bow on to get onto the mat just to walk across the mat to go to the bathroom.
That's right. Yeah, and it's true because you know, like you and I were discussing shortly before the show, traditions, protocol, dojo rules and etiquette and stuff like that differ from dojo to dojo or guan to guan, right? And
right.
You know, but it all, this etiquette is all based on, you know, one principle, and that's just, you know, mutual respect. However, as I said, you know, like a minute before the show started, I think the common misconceptions about tradition and protocol about martial arts are from people that do not actively study martial arts. They see stuff on TV or they hear stuff on the radio or stuff like that. You know, like the Karate Kid thing, the Cobra Kai stuff like you were talking about earlier. You know, they see that. They see the Cobra Kai sensei and they go, that's how it is. And you know, that can turn some people off. So it's going to be a great discussion. Later on, after our first segment here, we're going to have Sensei J.D. Hernandez joining us to give us his experience and thoughts on the subject matter of traditions and protocol in the martial arts. So for our listeners out there, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And we invite all of you, well, not all of you all at once, but we invite any of you to call in and join in on this conversation, whether you are a seasoned martial arts instructor, a student level martial artist, or even someone that's interested in martial arts. Please do call in. Our forum discussions are based on you guys. You know, we come up with these subjects because we feel it's information that we feel you might want and might find interesting. So call in and, you know, let's have a little bit of fun. So, all right, cool. Well,
very cool.
Let's get the show rolling. So let's go ahead and get our shout-outs and announcements out there. So first, let's start off with birthdays.
Very cool. Well, I'd like to wish a very happy birthday to Ron Kozakowski, the head instructor of Practical Self-Defense Training Center back east in the eastern part of the country. Ron and I didn't know this until about a year ago, that Ron and I were at the same seminar together about 24 years ago. And we hung out together. I mean, we literally just hung out. And it was with Guru Mark Stewart, the late Guru Edgar Salite, and the late Sifu Larry Hartzell.
Oh, right on.
It was
cool.
Amazing, amazing weekend. But there my
cool.
Shout out to Ron Kozakowski. Happy birthday, Ron.
Awesome. Well, today also, July 21st, is also the birthday of renowned Tai Chi instructor David Dorian Ross. Some of the Tai Chi players out there that might be listening might know him from his popular PBS TV series. And he's also just lately teamed up with Jet Li in a company called Zen International. And the whole premise behind this team up with Jet Li and another master, Master Ma, I forgot Master Ma's first name, sorry, Master Ma, is to proliferate the benefits of Tai Chi, not only as a martial art, but as a complete health system as well. And David was recently, no, I think he's still in China. Yes, he's still in China with a group of interns. They're working on filming some promotional videos and stuff like that. And Jet Li has been helping David Dorian with a bunch of that. And they've been filming with Master Ma. It's great stuff. So happy birthday, Sifu David. Have fun over there in China. Sending our best. All right. And this was a past birthday. Master Bram Frank just had his birthday on the 19th, and he is an instructor at the S2 Institute. So happy birthday, everyone. Now, with that said, for anyone else that has a birthday this month, and for the people that we've announced, we've got a special tune for you. Birthday, everybody. I'm always bouncing around in my chair when I play that. Oh, all right. Well, let's go to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page and let's do some shout outs from there. Before we get to some of the shout outs, I just want to remind our Seattle friends that the reason why we do the lunchtime brunch show every third Sunday is because I have something to do in the evenings. So if any of my Seattle friends are listening, if you're interested in learning how to crack a bull whip the correct way, not snapping it like a towel and taking an eye out, my Snapdragons bull whip enthusiast group always has our monthly meetup and practice usually on the third Sunday of every month. So, and we have it in our Georgetown neighborhood over here in Seattle, at the Seattle School of Acrobatics, New Circus Arts. So, you know, what better place to learn how to use a bullwhip than in a circus school? So we meet at 5 p.m. Pacific today. So if you're a Seattle person and want to learn to crack a whip, just come on by to Sanka, Seattle School of Acrobatics, New Circus Arts. So, yay, there's that. And let me scroll down a little bit here. We've got another great blog post by Master Gerald Rivera, that's not a blog post. I always expect him to put on a blog post, but he put a post on the page that says, "The universe is amazing. It found a location to open my martial arts dojo. The Mushindo Samurai Academy will open September 2nd, 2013. So congratulations, Master Rivera. Right on. Very cool. The Mushindo Samurai Academy. So there's a link to the fan page for the Mushindo Samurai Academy on our Facebook page. I have to really scroll because we've been really marketing this particular show so much that all I see is our posts. but here is another great blog post by Gerald Rivera. It's called The Conscious Mind. Quote unquote, "Did you know you have the power to change your life? Read my short blog and see how." So go ahead and see that blog post by Gerald Rivera, Conscious Mind, on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. Special announcement by Hanshi Daniel Hecht, the CEO of the Masters Hall of Fame. He has announced the date of the 2014 Masters Hall of Fame, and it's going to be held on Friday, August 1st next year. And this is going to be held in conjunction with the 50th anniversary. Let's try that again. Rented lips today. And this is being held in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the Long Beach Internationals, one of the most famous, if not oldest, tournaments in the United States. So check out that particular link that Daniel Hecht posted on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. This is a great shout out to one of our regular contributors, Elastic Steel, who we had on as a guest a few weeks ago. He posted this really funny video within the last day or so about it's kind of like a spoof being able to do splits and Jean-Claude Van Damme and the secret fighting technique of the drop into the splits and uppercut. Oh my gosh, you guys have to watch it. You know, I thought I put the link on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page and it's gone. I don't know what happened to it. But I'm going to post it up again. But if you're too impatient, just go to my profile page, Restita De Jesus, and you'll find it. It is so funny. And Elastic Steel, Paul, does a video as if he's doing one of his real instructional videos. It is classic. I love it. So shout out to Paul for that. That's awesome. But as far as one of Paul's actual instructional videos, he recently posted something about butterfly stretches. So he posted a great video on butterfly stretch solutions and information on how to prevent inner thigh pulls or injuries. So go check that out. You're going to have to scroll down a little bit. Look for Elastic Steel and look for butterfly stretch. And let's see here. We're going down a little bit more. And I can't find anything. No, I take that back. I want to place a shout out to Angela Montas. She posted a link to Genesis Action and Stunts. They're a up and coming stunt team that is based in Orlando, Florida. And they're always looking for the right opportunities to show their skills and talents. So they've got their link to their page right on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So look up Angela Montas, M-O-N-T-A-S, and Genesis Action Stunts. So shout out to you guys over there in Florida. And I think that's it for the Facebook shout out. So Sifu Bob, do you have any shout outs?
Well, I have one. I'm, of course, I misplaced the flyer for it, but there is a tournament that my son's going to be fighting in next weekend. A couple other guys from his class are also going to be fighting. I'm going to be drug into judging like I was last year, except this year I'll be more appropriately dressed. Last year I had cut off shirt, shorts. I didn't know I was going to be judging, but I was sort of volunteered to judge, I guess. And this is a Lima Llama tournament put on by the Noka Oya System, and it's going to be at the DoubleTree Hotel 1 week from today in Norwalk, California.
Oh, very cool.
And I hope to see the Abad Mencia School there again. They were a huge turnout last year. I mean, at least 30, 40 people were there from the school. And I know, of course, we both know the instructors, Andrea Abad and Jason Mencia. So I hope to see them there next week. But they were talking about doing so many tournaments, they may not be able to do the Noka Oya tournament. But I do hope to see them there. And that is it for my shout out.
Awesome. Very cool. All righty. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Again, later on, in about 15, 20 minutes, we're going to be talking about tradition and protocol in the martial arts right here on the Dynamic Dojo radio show. So please feel free to call in, students, teachers, or even people just interested in martial arts. If you've got an opinion or would like to share your thoughts about protocol, traditions, and proper etiquette in martial arts, you know, is it yay, is it nay, does it depend on the student, does it depend on the art, you know, feel free to call in, 347-677-0699. All right.
You know, as people, I never thought this would be a fight with us, but I didn't realize how many of our friends and martial arts brothers and sisters actually go down to San Diego, California to go see Comic-Con this time of year.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we have a something similar up here. I think we do call it Comic-Con up here, but we've also got what do we got? We got like so many cons up here. We've got oh gosh, what's the name of the big con? But yeah, people will travel to these cons. Like when we had Sakura-Con, it's the big anime and science fiction conference out here in Seattle. People come from Canada. We've seen people coming in from Europe, you know, and traveling
wow.
and driving from across country, you know, to dress in cosplay and attend these conferences and panel discussions with some of the, you know, science fiction and anime industry leaders. And it's amazing. I'm like, wow, where did you come from? You came all the way from New York. What? You know, don't they have these kind of conferences on the East Coast? You know,
I know. It's like Nerd Fest 2013.
Yeah, but you know, I like going to SakuraCon just because. I'm a nerd like that, and I used to be into comics. And, you know, I didn't know that there was that, you know, that big of a resurgence. I shouldn't say resurgence because I guess it's, you know, it's been popular for as long as I've been interested in comic books. But I kind of waned off of the interest when I got into college. And, you know, even now there's like 50, 60-year-old people that are still following the graphic novels, I guess that's what they're called now, not comics.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, they're called graphic novels. But, yeah, it's amazing. I heard about the Comic-Con down there and that it's huge, absolutely huge.
It is, and they have a lot of very well-known celebrities, Jessica Alba, of course, the group from the Big Bang Theory, because this is their thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of celebrities, a lot of, you know, Star Trek, they have a lot of Trekkies going, a lot of, you know, Stan Lee will probably be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's enormous. Our buddies, Von Tran, Daniel Heck, David Komatoi,
mm-hmm.
they're all going. They're all down there already.
Oh, right on. Well, I hope they have fun.
Oh, yeah.
That'd
in fact,
great.
Daniel Heck said he may be calling the show this morning.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. That'll be great. Awesome. So speaking of calling, 347-677-0699. That's our number here at Dynamic Dojo. We also have a chat board. So when you go to the Blog Talk Radio Marquee, if you're listening live on your computer, scroll down a little bit and you'll see a chat board. And if you don't want to call in, if you're feeling kind of shy, go ahead and type your questions or your comments right there on the chat board. And if you do, you know, please introduce yourself by changing your chat name from guest, you know, I don't know, guest 1215 to your actual name or your whatever nickname. So that way we know who you are and can give you a shout out. All right. Well, let's get into our health news. So this particular news piece was actually first aired on the AM show, which is based in Australia. And it's about how periodic fasting can actually be beneficial to your gut bacteria and may actually help you live longer. Now, sometimes people tend to think of fasting as just a way of losing weight. But, you know, I found, and I've only done maybe two fast, and it wasn't like for like months at a time or anything like that. It was just a way to clean out my body. Now, as some of our listeners know, and I'll admit, you know, I used to be a smoker, and I was smoking upwards of a pack a day, and I decided to quit. And part of the quitting process is detoxifying your system. And, you know, Bob, I went through that, you know, like 2-3 week phase where I was like just sick from what they call the quitter's flu, right? You remember that?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and that's just your body's way of trying to adjust to not running on thousands of chemicals and
right,
junk, right.
right?
It was just your body's way of trying to get rid of stuff. I mean, I dealt with everything, you know, the zits the dry skin, the even my tongue getting sores on it, and actually having flu-like symptoms and stuff. And it was suggested that I actually do a type of fast. It wasn't that I couldn't eat. It was more like, you know, lots and lots and lots of water, lots of fluids, you know, diuretic type of fluids don't count, lots of vegetables, that kind of thing. And that would help me get through it a lot quicker. And it did. I feel a whole heck of a lot better. And I'm actually thinking about doing a lot more of these very periodic fasts to help detoxify my internal organs, like my liver and my kidneys and stuff like that. So what I want to do is I want to play the original audio article that originally aired in Australia on AM Magazine. Here it is.
Science is a step closer to understanding how we live longer, with a new study which shows how a calorie-restricted diet and periods of fasting can change the bacteria in the gut and even increase lifespan. The Chinese study on mice has found that specific bacteria are enriched by a low-calorie diet and can extend lifespan. The study's lead author says they're hoping to apply the study to humans one day, as Alison Caldwell reports.
The study by researchers at Shanghai Jiao Tong University put mice on a lifelong calorie-restricted diet and documented the structural changes in the bacteria in the gut over time. The team found specific bacteria, such as lactobacillus, are enriched by caloric restriction and help increase lifespan. Lead author Liping Zhao is professor of microbiology at the School of Life Sciences and Biotechnology at Shanghai Jiao Tong University.
We found that this calorie restriction can promote the growth of beneficial bacteria, and this might contribute to the extended lifespan and a healthier status.
When you talk about calorie-restricted diet, what does that actually mean? I mean, how restricted was the diet?
The calorie-restricted group, we reduced 30% of the calorie intake.
Can this be applied to humans?
We cannot directly translate everything from mice study to human. However, the principle is applicable to human. Well, when we try to apply the principle, the calorie restriction principle, to human, we need to be careful. Each person is different in genetics, in physical activity, age and agenda and everything. So the nutritional requirements for every person is different. So when you come to human, you need to make sure that your calorie restriction is personalized.
The study has been published in Nature Communications.
All right. And that, again, originally aired on AM Magazine in Australia. So thank you, AM Magazine. Right on. So, such great research being done, like, all over the place. This is awesome. All right. Well, let's see. I don't think I have any other health news, so it looks like it's time for
news.
Right on, Bob. What do we have for weird news?
Well, this is more an upsetting story than anything else. You know, children, when we have children, it changes our lives. It changes our sleep patterns. Mostly, maybe not up front for the better, but eventually it becomes real nice to have kids. They're great for our families. They're just a good thing to have around. And I'm always a proponent that your kid's first words, if you're a single parent, should not be, "Where's mommy gone?" Or, "What time is mommy going to be back?" That should not be the kid's first words. Now, this comes out of West Palm Beach, Florida. A South Florida woman is facing charges after authorities say she left two young children alone in a parking lot while she attended a Lil Wayne concert.
What?
When I saw this, I said, no, she didn't. The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office reports that employees at Cruzon Amphitheater first spotted the children, get this, ages 3 and 5.
Oh, my gosh.
Around 7 p.m. Sunday, an employee eventually questioned the children, who said their mother had gone to the concert. The Palm Beach Post reports that deputies caught up with the 25-year-old Brittany Nicole Harris as she left the concert. Authorities said Harris initially told deputies her cousin had brought the children, but later acknowledged that she left them in the car.
Lion sack of, yeah. Yep, exactly.
Trying to cover her own butt.
Harris
was arrested and charged with 2 counts of child neglect. She was later released on $20,000 bail. Child welfare workers took the children. Bottom line is, if you can't get a babysitter, mothers, excuse my language, leave your ass home with your children. Take care
for
of them.
For real. For real. And for a Lil Wayne concert?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Give me an effing break. I mean, you know, nothing against rap music, so don't be spamming me with like flame posts or anything, folks. I have nothing against rap music. I do have something against parents that will basically abandon their children for their own gain. You know, we've heard stories about guys that leave their kids in the car while they go in a casino to gamble. But this this takes the cake. A woman willfully took her kids to a concert, and left them in the car to go in and party in a Lil Wayne concert. You know, I normally don't wish a backhand slap on anyone, but I do on this lady.
And there was something else, because remember what time of year it is, Seafood? There was something else you were going to mention as a reminder to our listeners, because it is the summer. What was that?
I saw this really wonderful, well done video on reminding people to not leave their kids in the car. And this goes for pets too. It was a great, I'll have to post it on the Facebook page, and I'll go ahead and do that because it's on my profile. So I'll just share it a little bit later during the break. But folks, do not leave your kids or pets in a car. I see too many people say, I rolled down the window. It doesn't matter. If it's 80 degrees outside, it can get to, easily 117 to 124 degrees inside the car. No matter if you've got the window rolled down just a little bit. And even then, if you roll down the window to give a little bit of air for your pets, people only roll down the window just enough so that way air supposedly gets in, but so their pet cannot escape. That's not enough air circulation, folks. We know that, and these are the same people that do that are probably the same people that complain about not having air conditioning in their car, and when I saw this video, I thought to myself, I want to try something. So, I went out and did some errands and stuff, and I said, okay, this is what I'm going to try. I'm just going to try to sit in the car for a half an hour with the windows, barely rolled down. So I just sat in the car and I, was like on the internet, and it got really hot in there. Not even 3 minutes went by, I started sweating. 5 minutes later, I started to get uncomfortable. And I'm an adult. Now, children out there, their bodies are not made to handle heat and to cool themselves off the way that we are as adults. And they're smaller. So, I'm in the car 5-10 minutes. I said, screw it. I had to roll down the windows and turn on air conditioning and start driving because I could not handle it anymore. Okay. The internal temperature in the car was about 117 degrees. And I was like, are you serious? You know what I mean?
Right.
And, So, actually experiencing it. Now, granted, people are probably going to get on the chat board and go, well, that was stupid. What if you did pass out? No one was there, right? I'll have to admit it was a stupid thing to do. But, I went into it with the intention of feeling it first, And when I couldn't handle it, I said, screw it. Let's get moving. Water. I made sure I was highly hydrated before I did this because, I couldn't believe it how uncomfortable I was, and you've got a little kid strapped in a car seat that can't go anywhere, come on. you know.
That's
and
right, but
I
now this does go one step further though, because you take care of your mom.
Mm-hmm.
This goes to the elderly too that may not be able to take care of themselves. Don't leave them in the heat.
Exactly. You know, and in a way, you know, I think it was a good thing that my car literally died, because the air conditioning was broken. I mean, completely broken in it. And you know, now that I'm driving a different car that actually has air conditioning, you know, my mom's a lot more comfortable and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, elderly, pets, small children, even adults. Okay, don't leave them in a hot car. Okay, all right. So there's our long drawn out PSA.
Yeah, just be smart about it. That's all we ask.
Oh gosh, man, that news, when you read that news story, I just flipped ballistic over here. I was like, what? For a concert? Ugh.
Right.
Oh gosh. Okay, so maybe something a little less depressing. How about some weird laws, everybody?
Some weird laws. Now we go to Oregon. There's only a couple laws in Oregon, so I did Tuesdays again this week.
Mm-hmm.
The town of Hood River in Oregon prohibits the act of juggling without a license.
Well, that sucks.
That's awesome.
A door on a car may not be left open longer than necessary.
What?
Yeah.
What? Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. In Pennsylvania, in Morrisville, women need a, this is funny, women need a permit to wear cosmetics.
What the hell?
Yeah, it'd be, what would it be, a cosmetology license? Or would there be a federal permit, like parking permit?
I'd be interested in finding out what state is this again?
That's Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Yeah. Pennsylvania, the ladies need a license to wear cosmetics. That's
right. Now, this must not be a party state, because it is no more than two, now they call them packages, no more than two packages of beer at a time may be purchased unless you are buying from an official beer distributor. So you can't go into a liquor store and buy more than... Now, what? I don't know what they consider a package, a 6-pack, 12-pack case. I would imagine it could go all the way up to case. So you could legitimately, from the way this is written, buy 2 cases of beer.
Right. Huh. Well, that makes for, like, pretty boring parties if you can't buy any more than... You know, if you have to go from, like, place to place, you know, to get what you need. I mean, that's,
right.
That's kind of a pain in the butt.
This one would hurt you a lot.
Hmm.
Because the only place, and we know, you sing in the shower.
Yeah,
it is illegal. You may not sing in a bathtub.
And how they police that, we don't know.
then whoever polices that could get arrested for being a peeping Tom.
Yeah. That's right. I love these weird laws.
This is one of those laws where people would be volunteering to police it.
Yeah. These are crazy laws.
It'd be like hanging out somebody's window and going, well, she's not singing, but let me hang out a little bit longer to see.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Oh, okay. That's it for Pennsylvania?
That's it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's Bob.
Weird news.
All right. Now, before we take a quick break and get to our forum discussion, because we've got one of our special guests, Sensei J.D. Hernandez, on the line, waiting to join us on this discussion, what I want to do is do the trivia of the week. And we just started this back up again last week. So here is the trivia question of the week. which of the continental U.S. states extends the farthest north? And I'll repeat that. Which of the continental U.S. states extends farthest north? Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. If you are the first caller with the first correct answer, and that doesn't include our guests, you get to win a chance to be a guest on the Dynamic Dojo radio show, or to be a guest co-host. So it's pretty fun to be a guest co-host with us. 347-677-0699. Which of the United States extends farthest north? All right, so let's go ahead and take a really, really quick 3-minute break, and then we're going to get back with me and Sifu Bob and Sensei J.D. Hernandez, and we're going to talk about traditions and protocol in the martial arts, and we welcome the opinions and thoughts from our listeners as well. So we'll be right back after this.
Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Need to get some rest. This is the worst headache ever.
Right arm's all tingly all of a sudden. Must have slept on it last night.
I keep losing my balance. These old bones need some exercise.
Granddaddy, what you just said doesn't even make sense. It sounds like gibberish.
Signs like these could be more than what they seem. They could be a sign of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Sudden trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
If you or someone you know has any of these symptoms, don't wait. Call 911 immediately. You could make a difference in someone's life, someone you love, maybe even your own.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Rosita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And today's Sunday Brunch Forum discussion topic is tradition and protocol in the martial arts. We have a very special guest joining us. And I just want to take a little bit of time here to introduce our guest. This is Sensei J.D. Hernandez, and his dojo is located in Pahrump, Nevada, I hope I said that right, which is approximately about 50 miles away from Las Vegas. And his dojo teaches Kenpo Karate, Kobudo, and Tai Chi. Welcome, Sensei Hernandez. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me this morning. I appreciate the opportunity to share my opinions and experience.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, you know, me and Sifu Bob are actually considering you as a special guest co-host. So welcome aboard.
You're welcome.
Awesome. All right. So, again, for our listeners, 347-677-0699, tradition and protocol in the martial arts. We want to hear from you for this special type of discussion. So, Cynthia Hernandez, when me and Sifu Robert were coming up with this particular topic, one of our main concerns was to, how should we say, kind of debunk a lot of the misconceptions about why tradition and protocol, the way we know it as martial artists, is observed in martial arts schools all over the world. Because there are some stereotypes about tradition and protocol that it's not needed, you know, like, for example, that it's not needed in modern times, and it's just, you know, archaic bunk and stuff like that. Me personally, I beg to differ. To start off this discussion, if we can start with you, Sensei Hernandez, can you give us some of your thoughts on, you know, how important is tradition and cultural etiquette in martial arts? What would be your thoughts on that, Sensei?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I think it's a matter of perspective. It's how people view the martial arts and what they're buying, what they're getting into. Some students strictly want to learn the art of defending themselves and self-defense. And, you know, that portion of it, the karate jitsu, as I call it, is probably protocols and bowing and putting on uniforms and tying a belt is not that important. But the person that wishes to have a well-rounded, balanced life and is looking to integrate their mind and their body to, you know, develop a strong fighting spirit, in that particular scenario, I think that traditions are very important, and they exist for a particular reason, you know.
Awesome. What about
you, know,
Bob? I'm
you
sorry,
don't
go
know
ahead.
Tradition, then it's probably not that important. If you don't know the reason why the ritual exists, you may not even consider it, you know. And we're losing it. That's the problem. The reason I was so excited about participating on your show is that almost on a daily basis, I have somebody come up and, you know, say, hey, let me look through your catalogs. I want to order some stuff with Johnny or whoever the child may be, and Susie. And they look through there and they go, oh, I can buy them a Velcro belt? That's great. And I go, no, not in this dojo. You're not going to buy a Velcro belt. And they'll go, why not? And I go, because I believe that it's really, really important that a child especially learns how to tie their belt. It's just like learning how to tie your shoes when you're a young person. You struggle with it for a while, but once you get it, you can see the excitement on the child's face. It's a rite of passage. They feel the confidence, and they say all of a sudden, it's, you know what? I can dress myself. And I think that's something that we're missing now. You know, we have a lot of kids that don't exactly know how to tie their shoes because they have mostly Velcro, and it's really easy to put it together, but they don't really receive the creativity that comes with making mistakes on how to tie a knot. So that's
exactly.
Just one of my pet peeves, you know. And,
I agree. I was like, I've been sitting over here nodding my head going, yes, yes. Because, you know, I specialize in teaching kids, and I believe that tradition is very important. You know, one of the reasons being what you just said, that it's important for kids to learn to tie their belt. And also to realize that their belt, you know, is kind of like a representation of what they've learned.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah, absolutely.
And that they're
wearing, when you buy the Velcro and you just put it together, you kind of lose a certain amount of significance to what you're about to do. It's just like bowing into the dojo. And again, if you're a martial artist or a person that thinks they're a martial artist that are working out strictly in a gym They're not wearing a gi. They really don't have a sensei. They have somebody mm-hmm. that they may call a personal trainer or a coach. I think they don't have to bow, you know. But if you're an individual that's committed to a dojo and you're wearing a karate uniform, then you need to know what the significance of the bows are. And there's mm-hmm. a variety of different bows. My mm-hmm. dojo, we do about 3 or 4 different bows. We do a salutation bow, the simple bow with the hands by the side, and mm-hmm. you bow at the waist, and it's a greeting, a salutation, and paying respects as you come in and out of the dojo or, you know, step onto and off the mat. Mm-hmm. We also have a commencement bow that we do to begin class, which is a little bit different. We have the kneeling Makso Sazen bow, Sazen Ri, mm-hmm. a variety of different bows. They all have a different reason why they exist. Again, if you don't know those reasons or the purpose behind the bow, then you're probably not missing a whole lot. You know, you're thinking mm-hmm. to yourself, well, I don't need it. But there's reasons for doing them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. What about you, Sifu Bob? What are your thoughts on it? I mean, what is in your opinion, you know, what is the importance of tradition and protocol?
Well, you know, I agree with the tradition, depending on the kind of system you're growing up with. I was a backyard student for a number of years where respect was the ultimate, but not in a traditional route. You know, there was no bowing, you know, to go onto the mat because we were in a backyard. But there was mm-hmm. still the respect, paying respects to the teacher, paying respects to the art, paying respects to the founder, paying respects to the students when you trained with them before and after. Now, if you go into a traditional school, you bow as you enter the school, you bow onto the mat. If you just want to cross the mat to use the bathroom, you bow in and off the mat, paying your respects. I agree with that there is absolutely a place for it. Mm-hmm. Some of us are so used to the bowing process. And I still do this. When I meet somebody new, I put out my hand to shake their hand, and I do bow. And mm-hmm. this is a mm-hmm. fourth habit. I've been doing it for 40 years. I'm trying right. to break that habit. You know, and I really agree with what Sensei Hernandez said. You have to know how to tie a belt. And I agree, Sensei, that a lot of the children have been spoiled as being given Velcro shoes. They don't need to tie their shoes anymore. They do need to learn how to tie a belt. And you're right about the Velcro belt. I think the traditions really come into place because a lot of the parents will put them into martial arts as a sense, besides the self-defense aspect, put them in as a place of learning more discipline and carrying mm-hmm. that over to the household. And I believe you need the tradition to be able to add to that sort of discipline nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. It's a... You know, and I want to kind of touch more a little bit on how these rules of etiquette and traditions apply to kids. Now, you know, there might be some parents out there that, you know, that might poo-poo, you know, these traditions because they're thinking, well, you know, I don't want my kid to learn, you know, some other culture's, you know, way of, you know, saying please, thank you, and da-da-da-da, you know, that kind of thing. I haven't met any, but I have heard that there are some parents that refuse to let their kids join a dojo because they have to bow, right? You know what I mean? In fact, years ago I read something about parents that refused to let their son or daughter, I forget if it was a girl or a boy, stay with a judo dojo because they had to bow, and it kind of was not like agreeable to their religion, so to speak, or they believed that, you know, their kid would be, you know, subscribed to some Buddhist religion outside of their religion or something like that, right? And I was like, wow. Meanwhile, the kid has no idea, you know, that it's a religious thing. He just knows it as respect. And unfortunately, you know, it's the parents in cases like that that have the stereotypes of what protocol is and isn't and stuff. But, you know, I do believe that kids, that it's very important for kids to understand the tradition, to for a good teacher to really explain why we bow, you know, and hopefully, you know, these rules of etiquette, you know, mutual respect carry over into their everyday lives, you know, and prevents, you know, these kids from getting into things they shouldn't do. You know what I mean? So, yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Well, I'm curious, Sifu, because you don't just teach one art or one cultural aspect. You teach Japanese arts, Chinese arts, and Filipino martial arts. You carry the cultural aspects of each individual culture into your classes, and how do you differ because you wear different uniforms? For you might wear a karate gi, you might wear a kung fu uniform. How do you do that?
That's a cool question, and I kind of want to get an answer from Sensei Hernandez too, because he teaches multiple arts. But you know, right, with my kids, well, one of our classes is our kung fu class, quote unquote, but we incorporate Filipino martial arts. And what excites the kids most is not necessarily that they're learning, you know, several martial arts, but that there are the same, how should we say, concepts of etiquette just done different ways. Like, for example, you know, the kids had learned what we know as manopo, where you, you know, grasp a teacher's hand or an older person's hand. It doesn't necessarily apply to just teachers, but an older person's hand, and you touch the back of their hand to your forehead. You know, kind of like, you know, I don't know what else to apply it to, kind of like, you know, kissing the Pope's ring, I guess, but not in that context. It's just to show respect. And it, you know, in the Philippines, it's more of like, you know, kind of like getting a blessing or getting a acceptance of something from a senior, right? And they thought, wow, you know, that's kind of cool. You know, so instead of, you know, bowing to say goodnight or goodbye, you do manopo. And they think it's the coolest thing ever, right? When they learn about, you know, the Japanese way of bowing, you know, Dose Pares way of bowing, you know, Grandmaster Christopher Petrilli's way of bowing, Chinese bows, and even how it differs from like style to style within the Chinese martial arts and stuff like that. You know, it really, for the kids, I feel that it really whets their appetite for learning about other cultures, and hopefully, you know, gives those kids more of a, you know, empathetic view on the world, right? You know, that other cultures still say please, thank you, and show respect, but in different ways. And my kids love it. It doesn't matter what uniform that they wear or whether or not they're carrying a stick, a bow, a Chinese gen, or, you know, Chinese sword or whatever. You know, they love learning those traditions. And they know, without no prompting of me, that all of those traditions are based on just mutual respect and just proper behavior. You know, don't talk while teacher's talking, and, you know, stuff like that. Say please, say thank you, you know, thank your partner for working with you because they helped train you, you know, stuff like that. They're just excited about learning how other people do it. That's what I think is really cool. So,
well, you brought up a good point, Sifu. You know, with the balance, you know, there are not misconceptions, but there are different understandings for different arts, like in a I was at one school, ninjutsu school under Frank Duke, said if you present yourself and bow with one hand closed, the other hand closing over it,
mm-hmm.
that means you want to fight.
Right.
Where other arts, that's a sign of respect. Mm-hmm. Where opening your hand, like say opening your left hand, putting your right fist against it and bowing, some arts say that means you want to fight. Other arts say that's a sign of respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good for a teacher to just explain those differences, that no one method of bowing, so to speak, is necessarily universal to the others. But I'm interested in hearing how what Sensei Hernandez's thoughts are on for the same question. And I can't quite rephrase the question like you did, Bob. So can you ask the question again?
What question was that? We've gone so far.
the different, you know, how does that work with different arts?
Yeah, how does that work with different arts? Because you teach Kenpo, Karate, Kabuto, and then Tai Chi.
That is correct. First of all, I agree that, you know, just about any type of ritual or type of etiquette that sifus and senseis and shihans want to put in place for their particular style or their dojos it can only make their students a bit more well-rounded. You know, you learn a little bit more from each of the different cultures and so forth. I get, you know, my thoughts, I try to keep everything segregated, keep it apart because there's differences. One of my other pet peeves is, and everything has changed over the years. I've been involved, I started my martial arts training back in 1963, so if you can imagine how much change I've witnessed, it's just mind-boggling to me. And I want to say first off that I've noticed a change in almost every aspect of the martial arts, and I think that's because people are mixing and matching and exercising their creativity. Some want to, you know, become the best they can, and their egos may get a little bit inflated, and then they want to become masters and shokes, and but they really don't understand the ins and outs of the very specific things, such as bowing and tying the belts and wearing the uniforms. But I want to give you this example. You know, I look in these catalogs again, and I see all these variety of different types of uniforms. And don't get me wrong, they're beautiful. Different colors, different types. But the thing that gets me the most is the material, the fabric. So, you know, you look great in a polyester uniform. But the reality is that traditionally we wore cotton uniforms. Now, when you have a cotton uniform and you are exercising in the art of karate, if everything is in place, if you synchronize your breathing with your motion and your muscles align and you throw that kick, that gi will reflect your action by the pop or the snap. It will give you some feedback. If the snap and the pop is kind of dull, that means maybe your power was a little bit off, your coordination and the synchronization of all your movement and everything was not, you know, what I want to say is it's not all coming together at the time. But the more you work on it, you get to a point where you get to feeling pretty good where now you're advancing and you're throwing your techniques and the gi is popping and snapping and giving you that immediate feedback. That, to me, is at least one reason why I keep my karate people wearing karate gis, and I want them to buy a 100% cotton gi, slightly heavier than the normal student gi. You know, I like the 10 to 12 ounce gis. I wear some 14 ounce gis. They provide a larger pop, snap. And when I teach my Tai Chi forms, though, if somebody wants to wear a karate uniform, I try to steer them away from that. I want them to get into the ambiance, and I want them to get into the feel of Tai Chi, the softer art. Now, does the Tai Chi uniform need the snap and the pop? It all depends on the type of Tai Chi or Kung Fu, Chinese arts, because the internal arts are now, they're exercising power in a different manner. They're a one-inch punch. You know, it's a twitch of the muscle. It's bringing the energy from, you know, the abdominal up to the striking surface, and it's a powerful punch, but is not necessarily exhibited in the same manner that the karate punch is. So different uniforms will do different things for different people, but I think it's pretty frustrating to try to throw a well-synchronized technique in a terry cloth or a sweatsuit or some polyester and expect to get a snap out of it, to expect to get some feedback out of it. You will never do it out of those types of fabrics and materials.
I agree about the awesome. You are what you wear, in a way, you know. So if you're going to do karate, you know, wear a gi. If you're going to do, you know, tai chi, you know, wear
a tai chi uniform or a tai chi pants and a t-shirt. Most kung fu schools wear with a, you know, sash or no sash, whatever. We basically wear a tai chi t-shirt with you know, kung fu pants, and that's our tai chi exercise uniform. You know, if we're doing Kobudo, we wear the karate gi, and then of course the only difference would be the weapon that we're manipulating at the time. But again, there's we've lost some of the reasoning again for wearing the appropriate uniform, and, you know, and it may not make that much of a difference if you're, you know, in a sparring competition. The polyester uniform makes you look great, and you're there to score points and so forth. But you can see the difference, and definitely in kata competition, you know, and you go to kata competition, the guy that has that well starch, beautiful looking traditional uniform, heavyweight gi, and he's out there and he's moving and he's popping and snapping. He's articulating his art in a much better way than a person that has something that's just moving with them but is not communicating the power of the strength of the technique.
Agreed. Well, we have a, looks like we have a caller. Let's go ahead and take a caller. We have Shihan Jacob Bressler on the line, who is a instructor at the House of Champions there in California. Welcome, Shihan Bressler.
Hello, and good morning to you guys.
Good morning. So we are discussing one of your favorite subjects, the traditions and protocols in martial arts. So since you're on the line, Shihan, can we get your some of your views on the importance of tradition? I mean, is it? I guess I shouldn't say the importance of it, because I don't want our listeners to think that you have to have, you know, all this protocol, otherwise you're not learning martial arts. I don't want it to sound like that. I just want to get people's you know, thoughts on, you know, why is it important? Is it needed in this art and not so much in that art, and, you know, stuff like that? We want to get everyone's take on it. So, Shihan, what are your thoughts on traditions and protocol in martial arts?
Well, you know, I'm kind of an old school. I mean, the gentleman that talked before me, I'm not sure who it is. I kind of popped in the end of the conversation. He was talking about geese and uniform and stuff like that. Yeah, the world evolves and things move forward and we have different materials. But, yeah, I'm still believing, like, when I went to visit my teacher from, I don't know, 38 years ago, that I haven't seen him for 28 years. He came to visit me with the same old cotton gi, the same old stinking belt, the same old looking thing. But, man, when he got on the floor and started practicing, everybody knew that he was a master of his own body and movements. And you could just hear that material, you know, just almost like he was part of his body, like he was built with him. But I want to talk about something that maybe it's more interesting about the bowing and the respect that you have to have in a school. You know, I traveled a little bit around the world. I trained with a lot of people and a lot of masters. I got lucky in my life. And I think that what we're missing today from some schools is that a lot of people claim to be the masters. And there's nothing wrong with that, except that other people come to your dojo, or school students that are familiar with you now, and they're progressing with their martial arts, starting to lose that respect of understanding that a master is not somebody that all of a sudden can fly up like Bruce Lee did in his good days, in his birthday, God bless him, and hit the lamp up 6 feet, seven, up in the air. A master is somebody that generated all this knowledge in his head, and he's a good teacher that can pass it on to somebody else. You not necessarily need to know how to do all those moves. You need to be able to teach somebody to do them properly, and you want to see your student actually exceed you and be better than you. We've been teaching students, thousands of students in our school. And we always say we don't just make champions in martial arts, but we're trying to make also champions in the heart, meaning how they're going to behave with the neighbor, how they're going to behave in the school, how they're going to behave with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can accomplish that, you really made him a champion in whatever he is in life. Because I really believe that the discipline that you get in martial arts, if you discipline with the right instructor to give respect to your fellow training partner, to your instructor that has been in a school longer than you, you know, the sampai or people like that, or your master that comes on the floor, to recognize anybody. Now, in a school like ours that we have sometimes two or three floors working out, one doing the kickboxing, one doing, you know, the jiu-jitsu, and one is doing the karate stuff, and there's kids and stuff. Every time somebody walks in, like we have people, like Cecil people, right? He's a master of his own and stuff like that. If he walks on the floor, I try to get the attention of my students. As everybody faces the people, bow. You know, if Sensei Mark is leaving or coming in, she and Mark Potter, the guy that owns the school, I turn around and says, everybody face Sensei Mark, bow to him. You know, stuff like that. But I notice many times I walk in a school or you go into other school, masters walk in, masters walk out, masters watch the class. Nobody cares. Nobody notices them. Even the instructors that are teaching, they were one time their students. Continue with life like it's no big deal. It's just a market. Let's just get it over with. 55 minutes of school and get the class going. And that, to me, deteriorates the value of, first of all, who's the person that is visiting you, who's your master, and then, you know, show me your master, and show me your students, and I'll know who your master is. You heard that before, right?
Right, exactly.
So, that's my belief, that old school, it's not what you said, which was very great acting, you know, oh, it's got to be this way, and I can't do what you did. You were great. But you were great. I got an acting job for you.
That's
what the movie is. Saying is, you know, I really believe that, you know, I'm a military person. I went to the military, and I really, by deepest of my heart, as much as I hated part of the military, I admire when you look at the American soldiers, when you look at those kids come out of boot camp, when you see them do some public stuff with the normal people trying to recruit other kids to come to the military, it's not like they're brainwashed. They're disciplined, they're combative, you know, being friendly to each other, their unity to each other makes a big difference. I honestly, from the bottom of my heart, and I have to go to work and do some stuff, but either way, I want to say this. I honestly believe from the bottom of my heart that anybody that is not joined the military at age 17 or 18, like in my country, should definitely join some kind of a strictly good dojo that will give him the same foundation, like basic military salute, recognizing other people, respectful to other people, and also the confidence and understanding the environment around you and be able to help other people and help yourself. That's really my bottom heart believing. And that's why I believe that, yes, bowing, saluting, and recognizing respect in school is a very important part of what we lost now with all the MMA and the cardio MMA and cardio kickboxing. It's like, what happened to the traditional, you know, bottom line of those people that sweat tears and blood that actually founded all these things and put it together and worked hard to be recognized as people that created that style. Today it's just been washed down. And I see that a lot with the system that I know and systems I work with, like Krav Maga and Kapap. They pop everywhere in every corner. And, you know, and no disrespect to them, they're probably greater martial artists than me. But what they do is washed down from one teacher to another, and they never even visit Israel. They never even seen the military in Israel. They never seen how they do it in Wingate Institution or in some other places that are certified by the military and the Israeli Ministry of Education. So, you know, to me, when I walk to one of those schools and I see all these things that, you know, I mean, nobody can do Kung Fu, and you are Kung Fu master, like the people that train 24/7 and grew up in a Shaolin priest monk somewhere in China. Am I wrong or right?
That's pretty spot on.
You know, technically, if you're in Japan and you do your judo at the Kodokan Institution, you're a good judoka. Now, if you're learning somewhere in Sacramento, California, from a guy that learned from somebody in Newport Beach, California, and his instructor was from New York, that his instructor went to Japan 2 times and got a black belt. If you went to the Kodokan where they did judo, with those uniforms the master was talking before, and on your black belt test, you have to fight any black belt that shows up that day,
mm-hmm.
sometimes 50, up to 100. There's only a few people mm-hmm. in the world that can accomplish that. You know you're in the right traditional homage of the judo creation.
Mm-hmm.
How many masters are out there that you can touch and work with that are real masters?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, to me, I'm always a student. And so when I see somebody that is some level, I'm not looking to see if I can beat him up or challenge him up. Today, you get a lot of that. Every MMA guy thinks today that the hell with Krav Maga, the hell with traditional kickboxing, the hell with what? Shotokan, what are you going to do when I take you to the ground? That's
mm-hmm.
not the point.
Right,
and I think that
right.
that's what the gentleman ahead of me was trying to say. And I just want to say this before I leave, that it's important if anybody listens out there that you keep that discipline and morale in the school, because that is what parents, when they come there, bring the kid there for. They're looking
mm-hmm.
for that discipline that they don't want to be the bad parents at home to give it to him. Now, it doesn't have to be one of those sergeant instructors that beats up on his students. I've seen those before, too. That scares
mm-hmm.
the students away, and nobody wants to come to that school when somebody just barks at you 24/7 when you're in class.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be a nice way that you can do it where the students respect you, love you, and then they become great instructors themselves one day and will continue
mm-hmm.
that tradition. That's my opinion and that's my feeling, and I will definitely continue my old school of teaching. Robert,
awesome.
Are you there? Is Bob
yes,
there?
I am. Yeah.
All right, so you've been around me a little bit, you know. I mean, I love doing what I do, but I really believe and respect, and everybody I've seen you work with has that kind of respect, and I'm really grateful you guys bringing that up. But that's my opinion, guys.
Awesome. You know, I really like how you brought up the concept of knowing who is coming and going, you know, like a master comes on the floor, you know, ask the students to just show respect. And in some places, a master comes in, watches class, and the class has no clue, right? And I wanted to touch on that a little bit because, and this is more geared toward, the parents or you know, people that are beginning in martial arts. You know, my thought on it, and I want to pass the question on to, not necessarily a question, I want to pass the thought on to everyone else here online with us now is, you know, when we observe these types of rules of etiquette, so to speak, for example, if master comes on the floor, okay, students, attention, show your respect, salute, right? And when we do something like that,
right.
I think what it teaches, especially kids, is to be aware of your environment, to know who comes and goes. You know, and not necessarily stare at people when they come and go, but to know who comes and goes. Who knows? That might be
Absolutely.
A great skill to have if you're at the store and some guy comes in, you know, and starts shooting up the place and you hide and you have just enough of that awareness to go, what was he wearing? What did he look like? What shoes was he wearing? How tall was he? You know, stuff like that, just to have that kind of awareness and to just be able to know where people are at any given time in their surroundings. And, you know, at my school, we have this kind of rule, so to speak, etiquette, I guess, protocol, where the students wear a different color shirt or uniform than the black belts. The black belts will always wear black shirts. They can wear the red shirts and the blue shirts and the white shirts that the students do, but the black belts, when they're, you know, in the class or if they're going to help assist with the class, they wear a black shirt. So no matter who is in class, even a first day person, they know who a black belt is. They might not know who that black belt or teacher is, but they know, oh, they're wearing a black shirt. That means I'm going to stand at attention when they come to the door to let everyone else know that, you know, there's a black belt in the room, right? And it's kind of funny because, you know, even now my kids, even if if a parent comes in to drop off their child for the following class, if a grown up comes in and they're wearing a black shirt, if there are other kids waiting for their class, they'll start standing at attention. They automatically look for those black shirts. And the parents now are used to going, no, I'm, you know, I'm Johnny's father. then they relax. They go, oh, okay.
You know, you're making a good point, but that conversation we can get into a whole different
mm-hmm.
radio subject, which is awareness and
right.
what's going on around here. You know, I mean, when I teach what I teach, was a lot of it, we did a seminar together, you know, have to do with, you know, attacks and defense and terrorism and awareness and self-protection, really. It's a drut, like they call it in my country, really, self-protection, survival. It's amazing to me with today's technology how many people stand at that ATM with earphones listening to the MP3 music while they're taxing to their girlfriend, and with the other hand, they're pulling $50 or $100 out of the ATM. And we did a show, me and Sensei Spice Williams, Bob knows her, and it was about, you know, protecting women. And this big guy was standing in there, and we have a knife in our hands and gun in our hands, and we're pointing it to his head. We're stabbing him in the back, pretending, of course. And he just finished his business, was talking on the phone, playing something with his telephone. And when he turned around and says, "Hey, what are you guys doing in here?" And he just kept talking. And we just laughed because for about 3 minutes we were behind him, stabbing him, shooting him. He never even noticed, never once looked in the mirror that they provide you the ATM to see who's behind you. Things like that. That is what you're talking about, that the difference between acknowledging, who's coming through the door, and instead of a father or a parent, and I understand that, it becomes like a joke and it becomes too many snakes or tension. But
right.
I think that it comes back to bottom line, and I'm going to say that and I'm going to conclude my conversation.
Okay.
Bottom line is this. When you look at a kid, you know what home he comes from. If the kid is behaving like a brat, if the kid gets whatever he wants, if the kid is in the news and everywhere he goes, you know that something was wrong and that home with the parents on bringing him up.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the dojo. If you walk to a school and the students are snotty at you, or they look at you some way because you're from a different school, or snot, you know, if they give you that, who the hell you are, you know, they see a, if they don't see a belt with a gi and 17 degrees in it, they won't bow to you. And you walk in with just a black belt, and maybe, you know, I've seen a lot of masters. They just don't even bother wearing that old raggedy kind of black belt that we have, you know, for 25 years that is falling apart. Sometimes they just put a black belt around their whip and walk on the floor to teach, and everyone, who is this guy? They don't realize. Anyways, I got to go, but I just wanted to say that it always comes from the instructor. If the instructor does his work, the students will be well-disciplined, and they'll recognize, you know, other masters or their own masters walking to the floor and respect them truthfully from their heart. You guys have a great day. I got to go. God bless you.
Great. Thanks, Sinan. Thanks for calling. All right. 347-677-0699. We are talking about traditions and protocols in martial arts, and we have our special guest co-host, Sensei J.D. Hernandez, with us. Sifu Bob, do you have any questions that you want to bring up for...
I do. Sensei, you've been around a long time, and you've seen things change, like going from no gear sparring to gear sparring, traditions going back and forth. Do you know, a lot of the media, you know, the media controls this country, and we've, you know, Sifu mentioned earlier about the gentleman who ran Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid about taking it maybe a little bit too far. Have you exhibited that? Because, you know, Shion Bresler said he has seen the senseis that take it a little bit too far to the militaristic background, that sort of thing. Have you seen that? Do you agree with it? Is there a place for it? Or do you think that's old school, too old school for this country now? What do you think?
Oh, man. In the early days, you know, it was everybody scrambling to... protect themselves during sparring matches back in the old days. I remember in the 60s we would buy boxing headgear, and then we had no Velcro, but we would get black electrical tape, and we would put a baseball catcher's mask on a boxing headgear and use the catcher's breastplate and boxing gloves, and we would use all that. That was before 1968 when June Reed came out with the dip foam gear, you know. But everybody wanted something because especially back then in the old days, everybody was looking to strike hard and strike for real. They wanted to exercise their newfound knowledge in a more realistic manner than I think we do today. Today, it's sports karate, and you know, it's become a game of tag. Some guys, yeah, they can tag pretty hard, but the reality is that it's a bit frustrating for me when I go to a tournament and I see that there's a sparring match going on, and now the officials, number one, I can talk about this all day because this is another one of my pet peeves. Now the officials, you don't even know who the officials are, number one. They're all in street clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are wearing shorts and a baseball cap tilted to the side. And I'm talking about open sports karate tournaments. I'm not talking about the traditional karate tournaments or Olympic taekwondo, but I'm talking about you go to just an open karate tournament. You have people officiating, dressed inappropriately, again, not wearing the correct attire. They look just like the spectators. Kind of mind-boggling to me, but basically these guys are throwing a technique, and some officials will see the technique and give it to the guy, even though his balance was, he might have been falling to the ground, and they will give him the technique. The technique was not well focused, he was off balance, but he managed to get his hand to the target area, so we're going to give him the technique. We're going to give him the point. When you're playing the game of tag, I guess my feeling is that we're dressing up for a full contact tackle football, but we're really playing flag football.
Mm-hmm.
But we're putting on all the equipment for real football, but we're going to play flag football.
Got it. Okay.
A big issue to me, you know, some people like the gear. It is a safety factor. But everything changes. Like I said from the very beginning, it's all about perspective, and that's the best way I can put it.
Mm-hmm.
Different generations see things in different ways. They're growing up. Some don't know any better. At times I'll play videos on a TV widescreen that I have here of some clips, and the kids will look at me and go, "Sensei, you're not wearing a headgear. You're not wearing any gear." And I go, "Back then there was no gear. You know, there
mm-hmm.
was, everything was hard and everything was for real." I mean, to get in traditional karate, they give half points, you know, they give full
mm-hmm.
points, but everything has to be in absolutely in place. Your balance, your power, your focus, and you throw a killing blow and stop it within a few inches of the opponent's body in order for you to achieve that one point, you know. And then if there's a couple little things that are not exactly correctly, you may wind up getting a half point or so. But today things have changed. You know, things have changed where I still believe in a well-focused punch and a well-focused kick and the person being in balance, not falling, tripping over themselves when they execute the technique. But that's not the consensus of all the judges out there right now. And we definitely don't have, which is a subject matter for another talk show, for sure, definitely don't have qualified judges when it comes to the sports karate venues these days. There's no certification body. There's nobody really certifying. And the ones they do certify is for a particular league or circuit, but it benefits them, and it doesn't benefit the overall martial arts community as a whole. It benefits the one league, you know, whether it be, you know, TPA, Tournament Promoters Association, or NBL, National Black Belt League. It benefits those particular organizations, but we actually need an officials organization that's for the benefit of all and not associated with any one league. You know,
mm-hmm.
but the sparring gear issue, I think it's a benefit to some degree. It's nowadays is liability issues.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I just I take it with a grain of salt. You know, some of the stuff back in 1975, we were honored and privileged by a preliminary match. Jeff Smith, and I forget the other gentleman's name, they did a preliminary match just prior to the Ali Frazier fight, Thriller in Manila, and 50 million people, it was estimated, were witnesses to that. I think when you have activities and events like that, where that was basically before, but it was a prelude to the PKA, the Professional Karate Association. When people, 50 million people tune into a show and they see that, even though it's a preliminary fight, and they see their paradigms change, you know, they take a look and they go, oh, especially if they know no better. That's what karate is. They see a guy with no gi top, a long pair of pants, maybe with a black stripe running down the side and a, you know, a karate belt on, boxing gloves. Back then there was no gear either. Oh, there was gear. I didn't even know. I don't remember if they wore foot protection or not. But they did this event. They did this this fighting on national TV, and I think the community at large walked away with a different perspective, especially the ones that didn't know any better. Oh, that's what karate is, and that's how a karate guy looks. They were not wearing uniforms. They were not wearing karate uniforms. So people like, you know, and then 5 years later, 1980, PKA was a regular event on ESPN, you know, and people were witnessing and seeing things and going, oh, this is what it is. People that grew up in that particular environment looking at PKA and thinking that kickboxing was the same as karate or the same, you know, some people have the analogy that we took PKA and we added grappling to it, and now we have MMA, and MMA is new. MMA is not new. Mixed martial arts has been around forever, you know, but people feel that way. And they want to make it easier for themselves. It's just the reality. I think everything is about convenience and instant gratification. And that's just an issue that I have. In my mind, I when people come in, a couple of things I've learned. This is all I do. I don't have a job. I'm not retired. All I do is I teach martial arts. I'm in the dojo about 12 hours a day. I come in at 10 in the morning, open the dojo up, and sometimes I leave at 10 at night. I try to get out of here by 9 o'clock. It's kind of difficult. Because I always have people coming in and asking questions and talking. But I try to tell them, there's no secrets. If I could sell you a pill for $10,000 that would make you an instant black belt, I would do that because, you know, it's just the right way to go. But the only secret that I can give you to the martial arts is putting in the work. Putting in the work to learn how to tie your shoes. Putting in the work later on, learning how to tie a tie when you're trying to put on a suit for a special event. As you grow up and you're a teenager, that's another frustrating part. Hey, I don't know how to tie this tie. And then learning how to tie your belt, wearing the appropriate uniform, paying respect to that uniform. You'd be surprised how many people I get that come in to work out, and the uniform or the gi looks like their dog slept on it the night before. You know, I got to remind them that you got to show respect. The martial arts are special to me because they teach you a way of not only being respectful to other people, but they teach you to be respectful to yourself first. You're in this because you're seeking to be a well-rounded, balanced individual in life. And that's bringing together everything that constitutes your being, your mind, your spirit. And sometimes I get students come in and I can see that they're not here. They're physically here, but they didn't bring their mind and they didn't bring their spirit. And I says, you need to bring your mind. Oh, I'm here. I go, well, yeah, but you're not focusing and you're not concentrating. You know, and if you're here and you have your mind and your body, but you have no spirit. Well, what do you mean I have no spirit? I didn't bring my religion with me? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you didn't bring you did not bring your willpower and determination. You need to bring that. You need to bring it all to have a good, productive training session. You can't be here throwing punches and kicks at your partner and daydreaming about being in Disneyland or in Hawaii. It just doesn't work. It's learning how to focus the task at hand and living in the moment. Yourself that you're making some progress. And so everything ties together. It's the uniform, the belt, the gear, some people come in and want to buy the gear right away. I don't sell the gear right away.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them, you know, when you make yellow belt, I will give you a letter, and that letter will let you inform you and let you know that you're now eligible to buy your sparring gear and that we're going to embark on sparring. How long mm-hmm. does that take? On the average, 6 months. I will not put a student out to spar that doesn't know his blocks, his punches, his kicks, and all his basics. Worst thing I can do, from my perspective, being a businessman in the martial arts, is to take a brand new guy, put him on the floor to spar, and he gets punched in the face. He's not coming mm-hmm. back next week. He's not coming back the next class. He just got punched
exactly.
in the face. He paid me $100 to get punched in the face. Why would anyone want to do that? Yeah.
Exactly.
So I make sure that they have all their basics in place, and then I say, okay, now we're going to embark on a sparring program, and this is what we're going to do. And that seems to work for me. I don't suggest it for everybody. But to answer your question, foam gear was a great invention. I think it has its place in the martial arts if used appropriately. And but I have seen a big change. Now there's so many different types. It's mind-boggling. It's all a bottom mm-hmm. line profit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it looks like we've got two more callers that want to join in on the conversation, and I'm going to introduce them both. At least I'm going to guess at one of them. The person that I do know is on the line is Master Douglas Wong of the White Lotus Training Center in Reseda, California. Welcome, Sifu Wong.
Hello, how are you?
Really good. And we also have area code 713, and I've forgotten who this phone number belongs to. 713, are you there?
Aloha, Master Wong. This is Gary. How are you, sir?
Fine. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. I haven't seen you in about 15 years, Sifu Wong. This is Gary Lee.
Yeah.
Fort Pride Museum.
Okay.
Oh,
right,
wow.
Right. Yeah, we've
oh, wow.
did a few things together. It's been a while. Definitely been a
yes,
while.
Yes, sir, it has. God bless you, sir. How you been?
Great, great. Been doing very well. And I know your project's been doing very well, too. I mean, read about it all the time. So yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. But going back to the gentleman that was talking, sir, I didn't get your name, but really what it comes down to is everyone's forgotten us. They've forgotten the
mm-hmm.
three most important words in martial arts, and that's respect, respect, respect.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really scary is that, you know, I made black belt in 1969. I started karate in 63, and I've seen the changes, and I've seen all the things you've gone through that you talked about. But really, they've forgotten us, and they've forgotten the fact that if you go into karate school and they don't teach kihan, which is basics, and they don't teach kata, and they don't teach the bunkai, the application of the kata, and they don't teach kihan, then you need to leave because they're not teaching karate do. And,
mm-hmm.
and they say they're teaching karate, but they're not teaching karate. They don't teach those four things. And the very first thing you do is you don't learn how to kick or punch. It's kind of like the sensei said on the phone. You learn to say yes, sir, and no, sir. You learn respect. You learn to do things that maybe you wouldn't normally do, but maybe mom and dad has taught you, but the sensei emphasizes that. And then if you're allowed, if you earn the right to learn how to punch and kick in a unique way, which is karate do, then you're a privileged student. I agree with him 100% about my friend Mr. Corley, what he did with the PKA. It was the television people, I mean, it was television that brought the people's light to what they thought karate was or what kickboxing was. It wasn't karate. It was derived from karate, but it was a wholly different sport because I went through point karate to full contact to kickboxing to the recircle that it's been. But it all comes down to respect. It all comes back
mm-hmm.
down to, I mean, it's like this. Sifu Wong hasn't seen me in 15 years, but if I had seen him today in person, I'd go up to him, I'd hug him, I'd shake his hand, I tell him how much I respect him and love him, and it'd be just like I seen him 15 years ago.
Definitely.
And that's what the martial arts is about, too.
That's what
mm-hmm.
it is, respect. Respect. That's the main idea you try to get across to everyone. But, you know, if you don't have respect, how are you going to understand anybody, you know? So, you know, some people say, well, you have to earn my respect. Respect is out there to be given. You know, if it's earned or whatever, respect is there. It doesn't have to be earned because you never
mm-hmm.
met the person before. Respect is just respect. But, you know, what Gary said is true. Was, you know, I went through all my traditional training
who
in Japanese style and Okinawan style.
Who is this that's talking?
This is Grandmaster Douglas Wong, White Lotus Kung Fu.
Oh, you're Mr. Wong. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought someone else was talking. I'm sorry, sir.
The other gentleman is Sensei J.D. Hernandez.
I wanted to say a shout-out to Gary. Gary, this is Jose Hernandez. We roomed together in Guatemala.
Yes, I remember.
Oh, wow.
Hey, little brother, how you doing?
And Sifu Wong, I want to say hello.
The NBO years, Absolutely.
I am
ACF. How are you, Mr. Hernandez?
His wife, and I am ACF, the International Martial Arts Competitors Federation. He had his little boy there and his wife. It's been a while since I've seen both of these gentlemen. But welcome aboard. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear
from you,
too.
From you, too. And you're certainly a good memory for me. Those were some great years. I spent 13 years in the NBO, and, you know, God bless Boyce for what he did for us. And I'm still proud to see it still going and see the new generation doing the karate that they call tag karate or sport karate now.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you
know, Mr. Hernandez,
you've
seen it too. 1993
to 2005, so... And, you know, that's when we were together there, that was in Guatemala. That was Eric Schumann's tournament.
Right. Eric Schumann used to bring me in with Pepsi and him, and it was a fun event. It was, you know, I went to Guatemala 3 different years. On the 3rd year, Mr. Anderson, I decided it was my last year, and I'll tell you a really short story. It's a funny story. You know, I'd never beaten Zufi before. Zufi Ahmed, the great competitor from Bushibon. And he had come up to me and said, Gary, I want to use your Takanaka drums from Rising Sun. And I said, okay, sure, Zoof, no problem. So I went to my case, and I'm looking at my case, and I see the Barney song, you know, I love you, you love me. And I go, you know, this would be really funny if I can't do that. This, oh, heck, I'll do it. I switched out the song, and I gave it to Zoofy, and he opened up, and we were going up against Grands. There's about 5,000 Guatemalans out there, and sure enough, it backfired on me because the Guatemalans love Barney. They got 9-9s across the board. And the Guatemalans, you know, like I said, it was an incredible tournament time down there. I really had good times down there. Don't eat the ice cream, though. It's made with milk. Ruby and I found out the hard way about that. But golly bum, you're a good memory, Mr. Hernandez. You were a great arbitrator. Absolutely. Yes. you made good decisions, even though you should have disqualified me a few times, I'm sure, but you didn't. Thank you.
About it, but I never did.
No.
I
tell you what, karate has changed so much in that time period, because even in the 80s and 90s, it was going through the transition to go to tag karate, and I don't see them fighting today. I go to tournaments, and I do the top Texas 10 ratings here in Texas, and you know, I do the Living Legends, and I promote events, but I just don't see them fighting anymore. I see them just playing tag, and I think a lot of it has to do with the promoters of insurance. I think a lot of it has to do with the judges, like you said, that you don't know who the judges are anymore.
It's very difficult to tell who they are, the difference. You know, and the other thing about what we do is that's a little frustrating for me right now is I think we have the only sport. And, again, there's so many variations. There's a traditional karate, you know, where those guys, the AAU and the National Karate Federation, those guys kind of got it together a little bit, you know. But the open sports karate environment and community it's the only place where you can be a spectator at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 10:30 or 11 o'clock in the afternoon, you're a center referee. It's like mind-boggling to me, you know. And you hear it all the time over the loudspeaker, you know, over the public address system. Can we get somebody to help us out? Can we get a black belt to help us out and move this tournament? We want to get out of here on time. You know, they just don't. I don't know. They don't have that core group of people that they can bring in and have every ring filled with officials prior to the tournament starting. The promoters are at the mercy of who shows up and who's willing to provide them free labor to be judges throughout the day. It's a different topic again, you know, but it just... kind of irks me a little bit that's the way we run.
Mr. Hernandez, you know, the secret of success is something really simple, and that is organization and treating a tournament as if it's a it's a business that day. I'll give you a short example. Mr. Roy Kirvin, who did the Fort Worth Pro-Am Premier Tournament in the 80s, he's the gentleman who did the two-point kick for Point Karate. He was offered the Karate Illustrated events back in the early 80s, and he was so busy, he passed them on to me. And I said, wow, what a big responsibility, but if I do it, I got to do it with the tremendous attitude I have when I step into the ring to fight or do kata. So what I did was I prearranged everything, and I would have 1,500 to maybe 2,000 people be out 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock and have a four-hour delay, or like I have a four-hour rest period and come back for the finals. And people always came up to me and said, how do you pump out so many people in so short a time? And it's only because you're organizing, you prearrange, have your judges handpicked, you have your center referees, and you have a bunch of people that really care about the competitors, the children, the atmosphere, everything to make it as professional as you can. So when a person walks in and pays either $20 a minute, which is $40 for 2 minutes or whatever the entry fee is, that they have the best time of their lives and they walk out with not only, say, points or trophy, but the atmosphere of coming to a real karate event. And I firmly believe today what's happening is that we've turned our sport karate tournament into a circus, and it's really sad. That's one of the reasons why the Sport Karate Museum was formed in 1999, was to show the history, the respect, and the honor of the pioneers and legends like yourself, Master Wong, whether it be kung fu, whether it be karate, whether it be judo, whether it be jiu-jitsu, that the attitude of respect has to be there. And today's generations of children who are now black belts, you know, whether they made it in a year or 2 years or 3 years, they just don't have that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sad thing. And like I said, every day the Sport Karate Museum strives to let people understand that it all started not with just the Chuck Norris's, the Alan Steens, and the Joe Louis's, and the Douglas Wongs, but it started with everyone that decided to go and compete, to go for that attitude of competition. When it first started, it was the first person to score 2 points, which is 1 point, 1 point. And then they said, well, that's just too short. It's going to pay an entry fee. Let's go to 3 points in 2 minutes. And then it went to 2 points for a kick and then 1 point for a punch. And then it went to first to five. And then it went to total point. And then it's gone now to a tag. If I tag you, it's a point. I could have stopped you. Well, not really. In the old days, you had to show the judges who had the authority to stop you or keep you going, that if you hit that person, as long as it was with control, you could have stopped that person in a street confrontation. And that's what people have forgotten. That's
mm-hmm.
what people have forgotten, because it comes down to self-defense. Martial arts is a self-defense procedure. And people want to take shortcuts in self-defense. You can't do that. Someone pulls a knife on you or pulls a gun or takes a baseball bat and tries to hit you. You can't take shortcuts to block that. You have to learn through tenure and through your instructor and through hard work to learn how to block that baseball bat or defend yourself against a weapon. And tournaments just gave you an avenue to believe that you could handle your situation. My situation, I believe if I could go out and fight, it didn't matter if I won or not, but if I could beat four or five black belts in front of my students, I could go back to my school and I could look at them in the eye and say, hey, I can teach you to defend yourself because I just won four fights against four good black belts. Whether I won first place or not, I still defended myself four different times. And we'll take those four different things I did and we'll use those and I'll teach you how to defend yourself. And they've forgotten all about that term. So that's all about trophies and awards and points and Hall of Fames. And it's scary. It's scary. So.
You know, some of the problems also that I noticed is, again, it goes back to perspectives and self-gratification and instant gratification. What happens is you get some people that participate in group events, again, circuits and leagues, and let's say somebody in the NBL or something like that, National Black Belt League, that gets a little disgruntled with the organization. Well, the first thing they do is they go off and they start their own organization. You know, that's before I came to Pahrump, Nevada, I was basically a martial artist in the Bay Area, you know, San Francisco, San Jose area. As a matter of fact, we still have a school in San Jose, California. There's a Dragon Cloud Dojo there. But the reality is that You know, one guy breaks away from the organization, he starts a new organization, and for whatever the reason, when they break away and they start their own organization, you know, the Bay Area has, you know, Gold Cup as the league, which used to be formerly BASCA, AMAPA used to be there, CKL, where it all started, California Karate League, Ron Martini and Leo Fong and those guys, you know. When they put all that together and people broke away, they have a need, for some reason, to rewrite rules, and now they have their own rules. And there are so many rule books out there. There's as many rule books in sports, open sports karate, as there are organizations, and people wonder why we're not going to get to the Olympics. Well, you got to show some unity. You got to show some standardization, and going back to the uniform, because we're talking about traditions, there's many organizations have rules as to the appearance of the competitor. You know, in the rule book, they'll say, hey, if you're going to be a traditional competitor, you got to have a pure white gi. Some go as far as just telling you how many logos and patches you can have on the gi, but none of the organizations have requirements for the dress and appearance of the officials. I find that ludicrous.
Well, the AAU has that. USSF, George Anderson's O group used to mandatory. But, you know, let's go back a little bit. And I remember your conversation earlier. What it comes down to, and this is just an opinion of an old guy that grew up in sport martial arts and grew up in American karate, is that when Mr. Nagel passed away, Mr. Parker passed away, Mr. Trias passed away, Mr. Urban passed away, all these gentlemen who were like the head guys of the various systems and styles across America, they left us through their time and age of their life. The people underneath them, they decided, well, no one's watching, no one's looking, I'll go ahead and make myself this 10th degree black belt or 9th degree black belt or 8th degree black belt, and no one will care, and I'll just do it because no one now has the authority to tell me I can't do it. And again, it comes back down to watering down the system so that once it goes out into the public sees what has been watered down. I'm a firm believer of this. Again, I'm just an old person speaking. When the Taekwondo people came to America in the 50s and late 60s, early 60s, they came in the sense of taking and bringing spas and showers and big, huge dojos and carpet and everything to a dojo. And next door would be a 1,000-square-foot, no carpet, wood floor, one bag, one mirror, bamboo curtain, walk-in dojo. And America's, they think, they because a guy would have a beautiful dojo, that he taught karate. And that's not true. And I'm not picking on the Koreans. I'm just saying that that was the influence. And then what happened was they put out these black belts on a yearly basis, and then they opened up schools. Then it was watered down, and they opened up schools, and then so on and so on. And it, I guess it happens in every system. I'm just picking on the Taekwondo.
That's the McDojo system.
Well, exactly. And something allowed that. And, you know, there's no lineage. And that's one of the things that I did with the Sport Karate Museum. I've got history generals, and I've got 158 of them who are either still here or they're gone. But the bottom line is that when Ken Knutson, Mako, and Sid Campbell came up with the idea of the history generals, I could call anybody in the country, and I can find out about that person through the history general. And it's not that I wanted to be an authority figure. I just didn't want anybody to be involved with the museum that wasn't real. And I've had hundreds of people, literally, in the past 14 years, now that I've got it open, they've literally called me and asked me why they're not in there, or they're this or they're that. Or, you know, I tell you, the most fun I've had recently in the past year has been with Master Ken. And Master Ken has taken, you know, karate to a humorous level, 11th black belt, America Dote. But, you know, he called me up and he said, listen, let's market something together. Would you mind if I called the museum, in the word he uses? And I said, of course not. I think that's such a compliment because you cover everything else that's real, that word. So I'd be honored. And so, you know, like I said, we need a sense of humor, but also we need a sense of reality that where we came from, we never forget those roots. And, man, when I think about Eunice Hernandez, or I think about Eunice Wong. I think about old school martial arts, and that's what we have to pass on to this next generation, even this generation that's now that thinks that it's all UFC, it's all mixed martial arts, but it started mixed martial arts hundreds of years ago. It just came to light now because of television and sponsors and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well,
are you in Arizona
or are you
in California, Mr. Hernandez?
We're talking about traditions and protocols. One of the things that most of us have to consider when we're opening a new dojo or dojin or kwan or whatever school, you know, is what kind of flooring are we going to utilize, you know? And I think the majority of us, we utilize the new types of mats and everything. But, you know, I can remember old school. When I came back from Japan, my feet, the calluses on my feet were like astronomical, you know, like my feet were really hard. People would look down at my feet and say, boy, those are black belt feet. And I can attribute that all to hard wooden floors, working on hard wooden floors. Every class would finish. The students would get out there with, you know, buckets and wet towels and wipe it down for the next class. Now I look at my feet and they look pretty normal. You know, I've been on this these new little foam mats that they sell through Century and stuff now for about 20 years, and I think my calluses have all gone away. And again, do you need hard feet? Probably not. You're wearing shoes now. You know, back then, I think when you think about traditional karate back in Okinawa, I think the calluses would have been a bit of a big benefit, definitely a benefit. Nowadays, do we really need them? I don't know. You're wearing shoes. We wear steel toe shoes, sneakers, sandals.
Well, Mr. Anderson, you go through the fact that your body is your weapon, and you go through the fact that you have two hands, therefore you have two weapons. You add the techniques like a Sieken, back to strike, Kyokin, Shuriken. Then all of a sudden you times that times two. Now you got eight hands, and you do the same thing with your feet. Your sub weapons are your knees and your head bust. So now your body is your weapon. So therefore, whether you got shoes on or whether you got a belt buckle on, your body is your weapon. I'm a firm believer that hardwood floors is really where the roots of karate comes from. I don't like the mats. I mean, if I do, you know, judo, I'm randori, and I'm throwing somebody around or I'm dumping somebody, then mats make sense because you learn to absorb the ball through the mats. But karate do wasn't made for mats. Karate do was made for out in the sand, out in the rocks, out on the beach, and you know, you're supposed to have some type of endurance factor on the factor of your body, and your body is your weapon. So I can ramble about this too, mm-hmm. but I agree with you 100%. Today's people are so softened by what society has given them that it's really sad when you walk into a real karate dojo.
I'm a firm believer.
I hate to interrupt.
We have better martial arts athletes than we did back in the day.
I hate to interrupt, gentlemen, but we only have 10 minutes left to our broadcast. And
My event real quick in October? Real quick? It won't take but 1 minute.
1 minute, because we've got 5 minutes.
Okay, 1 minute. Here we go. October 3rd, 4th, and 5th, the grand opening of the Sport Karate Museum. October 4th, we will have the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame at the Hilton Southwest in Houston, Texas. October 5th will be the 20th anniversary of the Living Legends Roast, and we'll be honoring 50 first responders from around America who are black belts, firemen, policemen, EMTs, paramedics, and I welcome all to call. You can call me at 713-483-0476 for your ticket, and one ticket takes care of all 3 days. Thank you for letting me
awesome.
Plug that, Mr. Hernandez, Mr. Wong. I love you guys, man. Appreciate
all
your
right.
time, and you're a good memory for me. You know, I appreciate it.
All right,
I'll post that number on our Facebook page. But before we go, I do want to hear from Grandmaster Wong about Chinese traditions and your particular thoughts on traditions, Grandmaster Wong.
Yeah, the Chinese tradition, they do it as a family structure. You know, same, most people call everybody a sifu, and that's a common term, but, you know, that's for the outside people. But, you know, people within their own systems, there are different more titles where they call the older uncle or younger uncle, so they're called Si Suk and Si Bak and so forth, and they have the aunts and the younger aunts also. So we base it all traditionally on a family structure. So our grandmasters are considered like our grandfather. So those are the ones we call Qigong. So there's many different terminologies for that. So we use all that at the studio, same thing as we meet people on the streets. The Chinese tradition is always to call the person's last name and then put the title Sifu. So like if I meet Master Lee from San Francisco, I call Lee Sifu, so instead of Sifu Lee. So the Chinese always had a more formal way of doing that. Now, even now, even when we open up our studio now, we have so much different structure in there. We have the Chinese martial arts in there. We have a Taekwondo in there. We have a Muay Thai kickboxing. We got the free running, the parkour. We have hip-hop dancing. We got all these different things. But when the person comes on the floor, we try to make everybody respect them, even though they're either an instructor, a coach, or a martial art teacher. So they all have the respects, you know, you don't be bowing to the hip-hop teacher or anything, but you greet him and so forth. So we try to teach him more of old tradition, but yet new tradition also. So there's so many different things that we have in the studio right now. But old style, yes, you know, this still comes from the root of what we did before in the past. Because the past will bring us here to the present, and it'll always take us to the future. But you must know where the roots come from before you can continue on.
Yeah. Well, I agree.
I know we only got a few minutes, but I got to say something about Kung Fu. Sifu Wong, when Kung Fu first came to America, I was so fascinated by people like Albert Kaskas and Terry Cassell and James Cook and other people that were influenced by Kung Fu, because the Karate people didn't understand the movements, they didn't understand the attitude and the culture. But through the years, it blended to something really special to watch a special person like James Cook or Albert Kaskas walk in front of about 300 karate guys, walk out with a grand championship in fighting and kata. So, like I said, the mixture has really been really cool, and the culture coming together through the years. Again, thank you for your time, for letting me talk, and Sifu Wong, it's such a pleasure talking to you again.
Yes,
and Mr. Hernandez, keep your hands up and keep your feet hard, okay?
Yeah, likewise. Thank you. Get back together and talk some more, definitely.
Thanks for calling.
Mahalo, guys. Mahalo.
Mahalo. All right, we only have about 2 minutes, but I'd like to take one last call from area code 616. 616, you're on Dynamic Dojo. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello?
Hello? Area code 616?
Yeah, this is 616, but, you know, I got to, like, I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you know? And I served for my children's records, you know, Spectrum Butterworth Hospital, six couplets, you know, that were born of Janine D, and the hospital just wouldn't give them, you know. And because it could be just something to do with the cultural backgrounds, you know, racism. Yeah, that's due to that. And the hospital staff, you know, they just don't listen to people like that. They take it as garbage. And they threw me out like a bag of garbage, and that's what it seemed like. They refused to give them to me. Even from the court, they told them to go take those records. They wouldn't give them to me, you know. They kept refusing and refusing. They just wouldn't put it in the right sort of way of doing it. And they just wouldn't give them to me, you know. And I think that's totally, you know, against the profit of hospitals, you know. What do you do? And you have to publicize this, and nobody here in this town wants to put it in the news, you know, because of the hospital. You know, it's a big corporation, big company, and they listen. They don't listen to people like me, and they say, you know, they tell them what to do. You know, they're told what to do, you know, when it comes to a big company like that, when you get so big. Yeah, they don't listen to anybody like me, you know. That's not going to happen, they say, you know. And as long as they keep that up, there's no way I can get those records or find out anything about those children. They were born at Janine D, six couplets, about 88, and nobody wants to do anything about it because they're afraid.
Huh.
You know,
sir, I'm sorry this happened to you, but I guess I'm sort of confused as to how your situation is on the subject of martial arts. You've called the Dynamic Dojo Martial Arts Talk Radio Show.
Right. Oh,
and,
okay.
And I'm wondering if you've reached the right show.
Oh, I see. All right, okay. It could be, you know, something to do with the type of, social you know, social, you know.
Oh, when, okay, I get it. When it comes to respect.
To that conference, you know, because they listen to that.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for, thank you for calling, and I hope you get that cleared up with the hospital and getting the records and stuff like
well,
that.
I hope so. I hope it works with them. Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. Thanks for calling. All righty. I was kind of confused there for a second.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
Well, Sifu Wong, unfortunately, we're running out of time. We'd
no
love
problem.
To have you on again.
Yes, yes, I will come
on. So that way we can talk to you, because we'd really like to talk to you a little bit more about this. So maybe we'll have a part two and having you and Sifu carry on the show again. That'd be great.
Okay,
so,
sounds good.
All right. So for our listeners out there who are now being cut off of the live feed.
Goodbye.
The live feed just cut off. But we're still recording, so, you know, people can still hear the hear the show when they go to the archive. There's going to be no live show next week. However, at our scheduled time next Sunday at 6 p.m., we are going to be airing a special encore presentation. So still tune in next week at 6 p.m. All the info on next week's show will be put on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Sensei Hernandez for joining us and giving your wonderful thoughts on the importance of tradition in martial arts. And, of course, to Sifu Doug Wong, who waited patiently on the line there to give thoughts to us. Also to Shihan Gary Lee, who gave us some great information about upcoming events and also tournaments and stuff. And I actually want to have a future episode about running tournaments. I think it's something that any interested martial artist would want to know about. I have a friend that's going to be holding her first tournament here in the Seattle area, and I think that kind of information would be great. So, you know, since you two are, you know, really great as far as, like, being able to run a tournament and recognizing what makes great judges and making a great event or whatever, I'd like to see about having you two on for that as well as other tournament promoters, to give new tournament promoters an idea of how to start and run a well-run tournament.
Yep,
and it's going to be fun. And thank you so much, Bob, for being a great co-host, as always. Awesome. All right. So we will talk to all of our listeners in 2 weeks. Again, not next week. We'll be airing an encore show. So tune in next week at 6 p.m. for a special encore presentation of Dynamic Dojo. We'll talk to everyone live in 2 weeks. We'll see you all then.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.